We're in a warehouse in the East Bottoms with wooden barrels lining the walls. And that sound you're hearing? It's corn being mashed up in a big silver cylinder.
We are currently distilling the light corn whiskey. So it's different than a bourbon, but it is a component of our Kansas City whiskey blend.
Nathan Perry is the head distiller at J. Rieger Distillery, which opened a few years ago in Kansas City. He's taking us through the process of making a small batch of whiskey, about 500 bottles.
So 4 hours for the mash part, 4 days at least for the fermentation, probably about 8-9 hours for our distillation, and then 4 years in a barrel. It doesn't take near as long to drink it.
Yes, it's true. Whiskey can be consumed much faster than it can be distilled. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's Central Standard on KCUR is an homage to the drink. From coffee to craft beer to cocktails, 2015 has been a year for imbibing in this town. In a little while, our food critics will join us with their picks for the best drinks in Kansas City this year, and we hope you'll call in to nominate your beverage of choice as well. For whatever it's worth, I love a hot toddy, so thanks in advance for your recommendations on those. I'm joined now by Andy Rieger, who's great-great-great-grandfather Jacob was the J. Rieger of J. Rieger Company fame. That's the distillery we just visited in the East Bottoms. Andy's one of the people responsible for bringing his family's distillery back to life. Andy, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
So Jacob Rieger was your great-great-great-grandfather and Alexander Rieger, who built a hotel that's now home to that restaurant here in town called the Rieger. He was your grandfather?
He was my great-great-grandfather.
Whoa.
So he was Jacob's son. He was the one that actually ran the distillery after about 1900 up until Prohibition started in 1920.
So growing up, what did you know about these historic Kansas City establishments and the relatives who ran them?
Well, we always had old bottles, old advertisements, old shot glasses hanging around our house. But it was something that died in 1920. And for me, being born in the 80s, it was a long time ago. And it was never anything that I actually paid too much attention to other than it being nothing more than a relic sitting on a counter.
And up until recently, you lived in Dallas, is that right?
Yep. I was down there, worked in the financial world for an investment bank, and got to learn the ins and outs of working with companies and helping broken companies get a little bit better. And it really translated nicely to being able to start this company right.
You are here on a Friday morning in a t-shirt with a little scruff, looking very casual. I'm guessing that your life is very different now than it was when you were in the investment world.
Different, good, indeed. I haven't had to wear slacks and button down and dress shoes on a daily basis for a long time. And that's very nice, but there are stresses with everything that you do in life.
Yeah.
And while it always seems fun, there are definitely aspects of life that are a lot more stressful today than they were back when I worked for someone else.
How did you get involved with what was it going on here in Kansas City with your great-great-great-grandfather's distillery?
Well, so I was born and raised in Kansas City and moved to Dallas in 2006. And in 2010, I actually met Ryan Mabey in Manifesto, which is the bar located in the basement of the old Rieger Hotel, just below the Rieger restaurant.
And he is the drink master there.
He is the drink master there and across several states throughout the Midwest, and some would say even throughout the United States. And so down there, he one night just said to me, he goes, "We should bring back the old distillery." And I thought it was absolutely crazy and ludicrous. And 4 years after he first mentioned that, we launched with our whiskey.
What happened in those 4 years that took you from thinking this is insane to being like, okay, yeah, I'm going to pick up and move and change careers?
The first year, nothing really. And then he called me in November of 2011 and said, "I want to meet with you Christmas Eve when you're back in town." And he put in front of me a really rough draft of a business plan. And we started then making some phone calls, putting projections together, figuring out exactly if it would work, how it would work. And I saw that if you could bring in enough, quote unquote, industry experts, you could make it a real business and not have it be some small distillery. And so we sort of went down that path and tried to make sure that we could start it out as perfectly as possible from the get-go.
What was it like when you arrived here in Kansas City? Did it feel like the right decision right off the bat, or was it kind of unsettling and uncertain at first?
Well, being from Kansas City, I've always had my heart in Kansas City and always knew I wanted to move back to Kansas City, but what I would move back for was sort of the big question mark. So when I decided to move back for this, In the first 6 months, we were still going through permitting phases and startup phases, and we hadn't actually started selling anything. So it was very, very scary.
Yeah, still so intangible.
Yeah, and I remember sitting on the couch one night next to my then-fiancé, now-wife, and just thinking, what have I done?
What did your family think of all of this?
Well, I'm actually the very last Rieger alive that is from the actual Rieger family. Several people have been born, but the last one that was born with the name Rieger. So it wasn't like other people were itching to get in or anything of that sort. So I was sort of free. And that was a big reason actually why I was so excited about doing it, was because it was more or less bringing back the family legacy while I'm still here and hopefully can eventually have more Riegers someday that get to be a part of it.
You started, a little terminology clarification. Some people use spirit and liquor interchangeably. Some think that there is a distinction in that a spirit could technically be any kind of alcohol, even the kind you don't drink that is unsweetened, whereas liquor is simply a drinkable alcohol that's unsweetened. It seems to me that splitting hairs. In this context, we know we're talking about drinking alcohol, right?
I definitely hope so, yes.
So which do you prefer to call these?
Truthfully, I have zero preference.
Okay.
You might get people around the city that have preferences, but for me, spirits and liquor are the same thing in my eyes.
Awesome. So let's see. You started with whiskey, right?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. And so we started with that, and we really wanted to start out as a Kansas City distillery that was known for making whiskey, because that's what J. Rieger & Co. was from 1887 to 1920. And so we felt it was very, very important to make sure that when we let off and reintroduce the brand to the people here in Kansas City and across the Midwest, that they first got to know us for not only being a whiskey distillery now, but reliving back to what it used to be back in the pre-Prohibition years.
What surprised you about distilling when you were working on that first product, your whiskey?
Well, so with our first whiskey, what we really wanted to do was we sort of looked at what people were doing and what people weren't doing. And so we sort of took hybrids and we bought a bunch of really old aged whiskey and multiple types, along with a 15-year-old sherry wine. And so sherry was very commonly added to whiskey back in the pre-Prohibition years. And so we thought that if we could recreate this old style with this old brand that we're bringing back to life, it would just really fit the picture. And so it was a very different approach to restarting an old distillery, or even starting a new distillery for that matter.
And then this year you added vodka and gin?
Yes. And so with our vodka, we brought that out in July. The vodka, there's so many of them out there in the market that we had to make it a little bit different. And so we sort of took a whiskey-minded approach to producing vodka. And so we blend corn, wheat, and potato to create our vodka.
You've got the whole farm.
Exactly. And then we redistill it in our copper pot still. And it actually gives it a flavor, texture, and aroma. And so it's very different than what most people are used to their vodkas. But if you want your vodka to stand out in a really crowded market, you got to be a little bit different.
How does the copper pot affect it?
So copper actually acts as a neutralizing factor to several chemicals, including sulfur. And so what it does is that most vodkas don't ever go through a copper pot. And so they'll have that naturally alcoholic flavor to it. But when you're actually putting spirit through a copper pot still, when you're actually neutralizing those flavors from the sulfur, it's cutting it down and making it a lot smoother of a final product.
I have a hard time hearing copper pot without thinking Chester Copper Pot from Goonies. You'll have to forgive me. And then the gin is your most recent thing.
Yeah, and the gin was our big PR one. Throughout the past year, we'd been in talks with a gentleman named Tom Nickel, who is formerly the master distiller of Tanqueray. He ran the spirit production for Smirnoff and the new spirit production for Johnny Walker while working at Diageo. And so he's sort of a rock star within the gin industry and known as the top guy through the gin industry. And so with that, one of our partners knew him and convinced him somehow to come to Kansas City and just meet us. And when he met us, he fell in love with our brand, the distillery, and wanted to start his own gin brand here in Kansas City with us.
Any new spirits or liquors coming out in 2016?
We've got a few that we're working on right now. We're going to come out with a coffee Amaro. We're going to actually partner up with Thou Mayest on that. We're going to come out with a black label for our Kansas City style whiskey right now. We've actually got 400-year-old sherry barrels from Spain that our sherry supplier sent us. And so we're doing different finishing techniques in those. And then we might have a few other tricks up our sleeve, but nothing official yet in terms of announcing.
Okay, well, we'll keep our ears open. What's your favorite cocktail of all time?
My favorite cocktail of all time is probably a Negroni. And it's a very simple cocktail to make at home. It's very, very flavorful, very bitter. And it's just one of those that people that appreciate cocktails, as long as it's well made, it's always a winner.
Andy Rieger of J. Rieger Company, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And now, with the holiday season on its way, a bartender from the farmhouse in the city market is here to help us make her favorite seasonal beverage. Margot Thompson, welcome to KCUR's Central Standard.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I have a rest of the show to host, so my friend and producer, Jen Chen, is going to join us as well. She'll be our taster. Some of you may remember Jen as the Night Ranger. That was her moniker when she wrote bars and nightlife columns for The Pitch. In other words, she has an experienced palate. Hi, Jen.
Hi.
Margot, what are you going to make for Jen today?
So I am going to make a drink that's on my current cocktail menu called the Kansas City Famous.
Why is it called that?
So I was toying around with these flavor profiles and the ways I wanted them to be represented a lot in, I think it was September when I was like first starting to mess around with it. And that was a week that I was in a publication for a thing, and my friends were like, oh, you're famous now. And I was like, no, I'm Kansas City Famous.
I love it.
So, yeah.
Okay, so this is the Kansas City Famous. What's in it?
So I took that vodka that J. Rieger Co. is slinging, and I infused it with some blistered grapefruit peel and some star anise. I made a persimmon shrub with raw sugar and red wine vinegar as my vinegar base. I also use Saint Germain elderflower liqueur and just like a little dash of Campari, a whisper of Campari, if you will.
A whisper.
A whisper. A sousson. And it's kind of sweet, kind of tart, kind of bitter. I top it with Perrier, so there's some effervescence to it. It's just a super, super, super easy drinking cocktail that, you know, a lot of times I don't necessarily want, you know, strong, stirred, bitter, boozy. Sometimes I just want something that's
refreshing.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds very refreshing. Okay, so walk us... Before we get started, it's probably best to be sure that we have all the utensils we need. Anything special that's kind of out of the ordinary or pretty run-of-the-mill stuff?
Well, so what I brought with me today is a 10-on-10 Carrico shaker to mix it in. You can use really any shaker plus a pint glass if you want. I mean, it's just, you gotta throw it around in something, right? I've got my Hawthorne strainer. Today I brought a tea strainer as well. My most recent batch of the shrub, I had to use persimmon puree as opposed to just the straight fruit. So while I got a great extraction out of it, filtering it has just been a pain in my butt. So we're going to do it this way.
So the puree is a shortcut.
Not really. It was necessity. We had a persimmon cake as a dessert special for a while, so I used the same persimmon that they had.
Could someone at home who does not want to filter, could they also use a puree?
Okay. I mean, to build it, yeah. Just to understand though that it's gonna no matter how many times you filter it, it's gonna be thick.
So walk us through it step by step.
Okay.
We've got the shakers coming out.
All right. So the first thing I'm going to do is put an ounce of this persimmon shrub up in y'all. And here we go. We've got our grapefruit and star anise J. Rieger vodka. And here we've got our Saint Germain.
Okay.
So I'm putting in a bar spoon here of Campari.
So do you, and you infuse that vodka with the star anise and grapefruit yourself?
Yeah.
So that's something to try at home. If you're feeling ambitious.
Yeah, I honestly, putting the grapefruit and the star anise on some heat for a little bit to get the oils going makes it a super quick infusion.
And so we're straining now. Out of the shaker, through a strainer, into a glass.
And for that effervescence.
Yeah, the Perrier just got added. And we're zesting, it looks like zesting some grapefruit.
Grapefruit, yeah.
Ooh, that's a nice shape for your zest.
Thank you.
Sort of like a little flower.
All right, and there we go.
Okay, let's see what Jen thinks. And I should say, it's a really nice orange color, very vibrant.
Oh, it's beautiful. It smells very citrusy.
Yum.
It's nice and light, and I like it because it's not too bitter, but there's like a nice little hint of bitterness, so it's great. It's delicious.
Thank you.
Margo,
does this pair well with anything in particular if you're planning an entire party spread that incorporates Kansas City famous?
Disappointment, loneliness. I would honestly go with like fun starters, you know, That's what you have with your cheese plate, especially. Like, that's what you have with your crudité. I feel like it's a really good drink to start your night out on.
Well, Margo Thompson of the Farmhouse, we suspect that after this interview, you'll have another 15 minutes of Kansas City fame. Live it up. And thanks to KCUR's Jen Chen for being our official taster.
Thank you.
After a short break, we'll return with the food critics and their votes for the best drinks in town in 2015. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay with us. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and our food critics are here. It's time to call in with your nomination for the best drink in Kansas City in 2015. We want specific drinks made in specific local establishments, whether it's coffee or craft beer, a cocktail or a mocktail. If you discovered it in Kansas City this year, we need to know about it. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Jenny Vergara with us from Feast Magazine. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Mary Block, blogging at Around the Block, all about food. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And we have a special guest critic filling in this morning for Charles Ferruza, Natalie Gallagher of The Pitch. She's their music editor and drink writer. Hey, Natalie.
Hi.
A few months ago, we all got together, and Jenny, I believe it was you who proclaimed 2015 to be the year of the drink for Kansas City. What did you mean by that?
You know, I just think that this year has been really incredible in terms of the number of distilleries, wineries, breweries, and roasteries that have actually popped up on the scene. And so I just, you know, when I thought about new news in Kansas City in terms of food and drink, it just, 2015 feels like the year of the drink.
Talk to me about the breweries and wineries piece of it.
Well, you know, I think it's one of those things where one begets another, and this year was the year that a lot of home brewers decided to take the leap and really start their own breweries. And so we're, you know, there's a lot of them that have opened this year, and there's a lot more that are actually expected in 2016. Wineries too, you know, we have a couple new wineries on the scene, which are kind of exciting to know that is still, you know, wineries obviously takes grapes to grow, land to have, and all of that. So it's a little bit more of a proposition in terms of land, but. Yeah, wineries and breweries really this year kind of exploded.
So let's start off just briefly with the non-alcoholic drinks, and we will work our way fairly swiftly toward the harder stuff. Okay, guys?
Sounds okay. Good.
Who has a hot drink like coffee or tea to recommend with some gusto?
So the $39.75 drink at Jack's Fish House and Oyster Bar is so good. Like, I'm pretty sure I could be buried in a casket full of this drink and would probably, like, come back to life a much happier person. So it's a hot chocolate drink with mezcal, and Kenny Kors, who's the bar manager at Jack's, he does a homemade marshmallow, and he brulees it in the glass. It's so perfect. It's his own proprietary blend of hot chocolate. So he does, I can't remember exactly, but it's definitely Abuelitas and then two others. He won't give me the recipe. He just makes it for me whenever I go in with sad puppy dog eyes and ask him for it. And it's under $12, really good, and like will make you want to sing Christmas carols. It's so good.
So the name and location of this delightful beverage once again, Natalie?
The $39.75, and it's at Jack's Fish House and Oyster Bar.
But it does have alcohol in it.
Yeah.
It's a boozy chocolate.
Oh, yeah. It's chocolate. Mezcal. Sorry, did I not mention that? Yeah, it's mezcal and... That's the booze. Yes. So a little smoke and some pineapple syrup in there too. So it's good.
Kind of a best of both worlds kind of thing. The child inside and the adult with needs.
Yes.
Natalie, do you, I mean, you've also sort of enthusiastically recommended a drink from Caldi Coffee.
Yes. Sorry. I forgot that we were starting with,
No, it's totally fine.
Immediately went to alcohol. Yeah, the matcha green tea latte at Caldi's Coffee. Super good. Matcha green tea is a Japanese powdered tea in origin. They do this one hot, and it's a little sweet, and it's kind of like a vacation from the harder, like, super bitter coffee stuff, but this is still caffeinated, so.
Matcha green tea is supposed to have 3 times the amount of caffeine as coffee.
Yeah.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, and I'm fascinated by it right now. It's real. I'm having it everywhere I go right now. I'm really, really interested in matcha.
Do you have a favorite place to get it?
You know, the last place I had a really good matcha drink was Room 39 during their breakfast. I just rolled in there and had one, and it was so creamy. You know, I think they add a little bit of dairy somehow, cream or something to it to make it that way. But it's such a beautiful green, vibrant color, and it's just sweet and lovely.
So we've got a couple of matcha green tea lattes. Jenny, do you have a favorite coffee drink or other hot morning beverage to recommend?
I do. It's not, I'm not necessarily a hot drink, I don't think. It's called the Peppermint Fizz, and it's at Second Best Coffee. They just released their winter menu, and they have some really, really fun, playful kind of holiday drinks, I guess you'd call them. This Peppermint Fizz has cedar smoke, nog cream, and it's shaken cold over the Red Ribbon Nitro Brew, which is really, really hot right now, and that's nitrogen-infused coffee. And it just makes this really creamy, really pretty, you know, it's got that hint of peppermint. It's kind of, you know, just holiday in a glass.
Holiday in a glass. So that's the Peppermint Fizz at Second Best Coffee. Tell us more about Second Best Coffee.
Second Best Coffee is located in kind of a nondescript strip center, I guess, kind of more in the Waldo area. It's right off of Warnell. And, you know, they're just kind of almost on the backside of the shopping center if you have to find them. But they just... You know, I love the name, Second Best Coffee. You just want to pull for guys that are already the underdog yeah. coming out of the gate. You know, it's so...
The perpetual underdog.
That's right. That's right. But they do great coffee, and it's just a fun, interesting atmosphere, and I think they have a lot of passion for what they do. And the winter coffee menu is really fun. They have a Cajun Christmas espresso shot with some spice to it that's kind of interesting as well.
Mary, are you a coffee drinker?
I'm not. I'll drink a cappuccino or a flat white once in a while, but I'm more of a tea drinker. Pretty
any,
basic tea
any
drinker.
Place you like to go for tea?
Crow's Coffee has really good tea, and it's Jenny, can you think of who it is? It's
the roastery?
No, at Crow's Coffee they have a great tea. It's the big tea right now.
Oh,
I'm blanking on it.
That's
but
okay. It'll come back to
it
us.
It will
later.
Come back to me. Yeah,
but you're recommending the tea at Crow's Coffee.
Yes, and it's but I'm really a basic. Tea drinker. I like it black.
So, and then moving on to like juices and agua frescas. Natalie, you've got a few of those on your list.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of Tropicana on Southwest Boulevard, which I feel like, you know, as long as we're talking about underdogs, that always gets overlooked for some reason. But it's incredible. They've got, like, you can go in, you can get basically any smoothie. Like, you can get malts and fresh fruit and house-made ice creams any day of the week. I'm just a really big fan of their Agua Frescas, which is really a simple product. It's water sweetened with fruit, super natural. They've usually got 2, 3, sometimes 4 varieties to pick from. The agua de mango is probably my favorite. So you get like tiny little chunks of fresh mango. It's so good. I usually want to spike it and then it disappears before I get a chance to. I'm also a really big fan of the juice program over at the Filling Station on Gilliam.
That is a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one. We've got a lot of juice shops popping up right now, but this one is kind of like my go-to. And it's great for when I feel like I need to give my liver a break.
What do you like to get at the Filling Station?
The Beet Sipper is probably my favorite. It's just like mostly beets, and I think they put apple in there and a couple other things, but it's great because I refuse to eat beets whole. Something about the texture of them just really turns me off, but drinking them I have no problem, and it's super fresh and it's really pretty. It's a beautiful purple color. It usually matches my lipstick, so I feel great about it.
And a beet juice is usually pretty earthy. Is this earthy?
Yes, super earthy. Super earthy, but also strangely sweet because of the other ingredients that they add in there, some of the natural juices from the apple and other stuff.
So that's the Beet Sipper at Filling Station on Gilliam. Any other non-hard beverages before we hit the bar?
I really like everything at Little Freshie, and she makes... It's more of a summer drink. It's very refreshing. She makes a lot of sodas and floats. And there's a lemon prickly pear soda from Little Freshie that kind of reminds me of a margarita I just had in Santa Fe. But I love the prickly pear flavor. And then they're carbonated and really refreshing.
And that's over on the west side.
It is. And the tea I was trying to think of is Hugo's.
Oh, Hugo's.
So Hugo's tea at Crow's Coffee.
Yes.
And Jenny, you recommended a drink from Little Freshie's too.
Yeah, you know, everyone loves her. I mean, she just does such a nice job on the west side.
And her, that refers to Lindsay Larrett.
Sorry, yes, the owner. And, you know, I like the gin fizz. And it makes me feel healthy drinking it, even though it's got a little simple, you know, syrup in there. So it's not exactly a health tonic for sure. But there's just something very refreshing. It's just effervescent. And I just love that little bite of ginger. So it's the spicy ginger fizz at Little Freshie.
And as long as we're talking about sodas really quick, I just want to shout out Andrew Olson at Blue Stem. He's the bar manager there. He does a great job with alcohol, but if you are not feeling like imbibing, his caramel cream soda will seriously knock you off your bar stool.
Tell us more about it.
It's a super simple recipe from what he's told me, but it's, you know, Andrew does like, he'll ask you what flavors you want, and he'll give you some choices. You'll pick one. I said caramel. He said, here's a caramel cream soda, and it disappeared in approximately 30 seconds. Really creamy, naturally sweet, but not cloying, not overwhelming.
And that's at Blue Stem.
Blue Stem, yeah.
So, okay, I think we're ready to hit the bar. Am I right, guys?
I think so.
Yes.
Jenny, you've included some of your favorite craft breweries and wineries on your list. So start off by telling us about those.
Yeah, so I just had the pleasure, basically, of getting a tour of Crane Brewing Company, and they just basically launched distribution on the Kansas side as of this week, actually. Had a little bit of a party over the weekend, but before Thanksgiving, I got a nice tour of that place, and I had a most wonderful, it was the Apricot Goes, which is a sour beer, and it was just one of the ones that they're kind of playing with right now. They're really known for doing a lot of interesting things with sour beer. Michael Crane is the brewer there, and he's like this fabulous, brainy, geeky, like perfect person to brew beer, and you know, it was just refreshing and very fruit forward and had a little hint of sour on the back, not sweet at all. It was just really balanced, and that's the one thing that I'm always looking for in any drink, so I enjoyed that very much.
So a nice balanced beer.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us about your favorite winery.
You know, there's so many of them that are doing such interesting things right now. You know, I still am hooked on rosé, especially in the summertime, obviously. So I'm recommending basically the Aphrodite, which is at Somerset Ridge Winery, as well as the one at Amigoni Urban Winery down in the West Bottoms. I think both of them do a fantastic job. They're both made with Cab Franc, which is a fabulous grape, but dry French-style, dry rosé, fantastic.
We're talking about all of the great things you can drink in Kansas City right now. We're doing the whole gamut from coffees to sodas to cocktails to beers and wines. Call 816-235-2888 to tell us about your beverage of choice in Kansas City. Let's hear from Rebecca in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Gina. I wanted to note to Manifesto, the speakeasy in the Rieger, and I think they make the best Manhattan, and I believe it. I'm not sure offhand if they make their own bitters or they make their own vermouth in-house, but by far the best Manhattan I've ever had in Kansas City, and I think especially with this cold weather coming in, I mean, a good whiskey drink to just warm your body, warm your heart. It's a good way to start the holidays.
Rebecca, it sounds like you are a Manhattan drinker in general. Can you tell us about the place that a Manhattan holds in your heart and what makes one good from your perspective?
Yeah, I think kind of going back to, I guess, a family tradition, my mom enlightened me on Manhattans, and it's definitely an acquired taste, and I believe it's, and I'm not sure exactly the ratio, but it's whiskey, bitters, vermouth, and then you can do a little bit of a lemon twist with it. And I think it's just a wintry drink. I mean, it has a little bit of that bite to it, but I mean, with the frostbite and the whiskey bite, it goes hand in hand, I think.
So that just works for you. And so
yeah.
Rebecca's recommending the Manhattan at Manifesto. Does anyone else here know of a great Manhattan?
There's one at the American that's not a traditional Manhattan. It's called the Manhattan Boulevard, and instead of bitters, it has a Campari ice cube in it, which I love that concept because you're not diluting the whiskey. And when the ice cube melts, it's just Campari into your drink, and it's really good.
Delicious.
And that's at the American restaurant?
Yes, and you can go to the lounge and order that in a few small plates, and it's a pretty great evening.
Any other Manhattans to recommend in this room? No? Okay. Well, so who else should be talking about the distilleries. We heard from Andy Rieger at J. Rieger Co. earlier in the show, but Natalie, you recently wrote an article about distilleries in general in the Pitch. Tell us about the scene overall.
The scene overall is exploding. In 2016, we're going to have, by my count, at least 3 new distilleries. Tomstown at 1701 Main in the Crossroads, which is focusing on sort of, their whole thing is Prohibition era cocktails. The owners both have ties to Pendergast and Prohibition era stuff, which
what
is kind
of ties?
Familial.
Yes. So Dave's grandfather was a competing bootlegger with Pendergast. And the other gentleman's name who is escaping me right now, which is embarrassing. But
Steve.
Steve, yes. Thank you. His great-great uncle was the U.S. general attorney to put Pendergast away for tax evasion. So fast forward to now, they're kind of reviving the concept, and they're going to come out in the new year with their own products. They're doing vodka and gin, and then they've purchased a 10-year-aged bourbon that they're going to be offering under their name. So that's really exciting. We're also going to see Lifted Spirits, which is also in the Crossroads. They'll be doing 2 gins, 1 vodka, and then an absinthe recipe, which is
really exciting. That's hardcore.
Yeah, they're really fun. And then in North Kansas City, we have Restless Spirits, and they're going to be debuting an Irish-American whiskey. So normally whiskey and bourbon, you know, those products have to age, which is why, you know, Tomstown has purchased their 10-year-old. Obviously, they're brand new. They're not 10 years old. So that's how they're able to offer that product. But the Restless Spirits they have a still, and they're just fast-forwarding the process a little bit. They're aging it in smaller barrels, which kind of expedites the sort of aging thing. I'm all like, my technical terms are totally, this isn't like right at all, but so they're going to be offering that in February, I think. It's going to
cool.
be fun.
Well, that is amazing. That's a lot of local distilling going on in a town that for a while, I mean, until very recently, I would say there was something of a drought, if you will allow that.
Well, and that's the way it is with the breweries, too. As Jenny mentioned, they've just exploded. And the East Crossroads, I think that's going to really help bring that area back. There are three right now on the same block. And in the spring, Ted Habiger is going to be part of one that also opens. And his is going to be distinguished, I think, by the fact that he has a real kitchen. Most of them just have beer, and he's going to have both.
Okay, quickly, you guys, before we go to a break, I want to hear one cocktail each from you that just really blows your mind. Jenny?
Okay, so I'm going to give a shout out to the W Bar in Lee Summit. I had a fantastic smoked vanilla bourbon cocktail out there that basically he takes a glass, he lights some wood on fire, he puts the glass underneath this dome. Basically, the smoke kind of infuses the bourbon that's been sitting in the glass. He pulls it out, he finishes the drink and hands it to you. And when you pull it up to your nose, it's like a warm sugar cookie. It's absolutely a fantastically balanced drink, but it smells like heaven. And it's such a cool place. Really, really neat speakeasy in downtown historic Lee Summit.
And that's the smoked vanilla bourbon drink at the W Bar in Lee Summit. Mary, your quick review of a favorite cocktail.
I'm much more of a wine drinker, but I do like a really good Bloody Mary. And it might be a boring drink, but if you get it at Rye or Blue Stem, it's anything but boring. The vodka is infused with peppers. It's got a great kick. It's perfect.
Okay, so that's the Bloody Mary at Rye or Blue Stem. And Natalie, what about you?
So there's this drink that just came on the menu at Manifesto, which just debuted their new winter cocktail menu on Monday. It's called the Charlie Brown, and it's almost styled like a flip, but it is actually made with mascarpone cheese instead.
Cheese? Say what?
Yeah.
So it's dessert.
So good. It's so good. So it's got a cheese foam on top, which is creamy, and then it's also got Calvados, which is an apple brandy that is only made in Normandy. And those are the two main ingredients in it, but it's stirred, served up, and super balanced.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we'll be hitting your calls. So if you want to get in on this conversation, hurry up. Now's the time. The best drink in Kansas City in 2015, 816-235-2888. And go. We'll be right back. And we're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and you are listening to the last food show of the year with Mary Block, Jenny Vergara, and Natalie Gallagher. Our critics are calling 2015 the year of the drink, and we want to hear about your favorite drink in town, 816-235-2888. Natalie, you have a favorite bartender, it seems, or maybe not favorite, but a bartender you're giving a shout out to. You want to talk about this? Someone who is at the Homesteader now, I believe?
So Eric Mariscal is currently at the Homesteader, but in 2 weeks he's going to be taking over the bar program at 801 Fish, which is exciting. It's also a pretty big move for him going corporate. So it'll be interesting what he does there and how he sort of rearranges the program. But my favorite thing about Eric is sort of his approach to building cocktails, because he moved here from California maybe a year or so ago, a little over that. And he is used to having just a bevy of fresh ingredients to work with. And despite moving to the middle of the country and dealing with some sort of climate changes, that hasn't really stopped him from bringing that process into his cocktails. So at the Homesteader right now, he's got the Good Vision, which is this carrot drink. So it's carrot juice and vodka and some other things, but mostly the point is that it feels like I'm drinking fresh juice, but it has alcohol in it, so it's kind of like a win-win.
Those are dangerous.
Yeah, those are dangerous. And Mary, you're recommending a drink at the Jacobson. Tell us about that.
Yes. It's basically a bourbon drink, but it's muddled with fresh red pepper and lemon.
What's it called?
It's called the Syrup and Honey, and it's mixed also with house made basil and red pepper syrup. And what's a little different about it is that you can really taste the fresh red pepper. And I'm not used to those kind of drinks really, you know, that kind of thing really shining. It's got a little lemonade on top, and it's really a nice drink. And it's not sweet, even though it seems like syrup and honey would be. It doesn't taste sweet.
Mary Block of Around the Block, it has been a pleasure, as always.
Great to see you, Gina.
And Natalie Gallagher of The Pitch, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Gina.
Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, thanks so much for your recommendations.
Thanks, and drink local.
Our definitive list of the best drinks in Kansas City will be online later today at kcur.org/centralstandard. 2015 may be the year of the drink, according to our critics, but drinks, or lack thereof, have figured prominently in Kansas City's history as well. And the history of alcohol consumption figures prominently in our next story. As part of our What Is That series, we were asked to look into a seemingly abandoned building off of I-35 at Southwest Boulevard. It's 6 stories tall and towers over its neighbors. Our intern, Kyle J. Smith, decided to sleuth it out.
Answering the question, what is that, turned out to be rather straightforward. The answer is displayed on the side of the building in huge font. imperialbrewery.com. That's a landing page made by Dean Realty, who has owned the building since 2007. I called and scheduled a tour.
All right, just passed signs for Dean Realty Company. I hope that's not where I was supposed to be. Ah, there she is.
I eventually found my way into the parking lot. On the grounds, there are 2 buildings. The 6-story building has lower wings attached on each side. And there's a separate building. It's just a single story. I found the folks from Dean Realty in the parking lot between the two. Sherry Miller is the director of marketing. She handed me a hard hat and told me the building had been abandoned for over 30 years. It was at the mercy of the elements and whoever wanted to check it out.
I sat out here in this parking lot one day and watched a man walk across here, and he went over to the mule barn, the horse stables next door, and knocked on the door, and someone opened it like it was his home.
Sherry said Dean has now secured the building and made it safe for tours. The inside of the main building is covered in grime. You can see charred areas where it caught fire in 2012.
The vandals and the taggers really came in and did a number on the building.
Hardly anything today indicates what this building was, well, besides the sign. The story of this building started over 100 years ago. It opened as Imperial Brewery in 1901. There were many advantages to making beer in Kansas City, including great railroad access.
In Kansas City, you'd kind of describe it as the crossroads.
That's H. James Maxwell, author of Hometown Beer, a book on the history of Kansas City breweries. He says Imperial was started by investors from St. Louis and local saloon owners.
They were able to build a brewery and build it with all this new technology, where everybody else had been having to upgrade their facility.
The tall building was originally the brew house.
Brew houses were built that way, and it became the way of doing it, where they would hoist the grain up to the top level and then use gravity in the brewing process, and by the time they got down to the bottom level, it was beer.
According to James, much of what the business needed was located on the grounds.
It had a facility to make and repair barrels. It had a facility to make and repair harnesses, to stable the horses, to keep the wagons functioning. There was a lot more to the business than we think about today. And they tended to be rather self-contained, self-supporting.
Imperial Brewery made 2 lager-style beers, the Mayflower and the Imperial Seal. In James's book, Hometown Beer, you can see metal serving trays that were made for the brands. They show a family of bears enjoying beer on a picnic, Father Bear is guzzling a beer as a bear cub licks up the beer that is spilt on the forest floor. Another bear cub is approaching the drinkers with their mother, who sticks out her empty glass as if to say, "Beer me." The caption reads, "The whole family likes it." Much of the advertising James shares in the book is from his own collection of Brewery Anna, or collectibles related to breweries. In advertisements, Imperial Brewery was sometimes portrayed bigger than it actually was.
And the psychology of it was, we're so big, we're making so much beer, therefore our beer must be good, and if you don't like it, there's something wrong with you.
By 1905, Imperial Brewery was in financial trouble and was forced into involuntary bankruptcy. That same year, the Ferdheim Brewing Company and the Rochester Brewing Company merged to form Kansas City's Breweries Company. They purchased Imperial Brewery in an auction for $99,500 plus the mortgage on the building.
It was operated as Imperial for a period of time, but ultimately the name was changed to Rochester Brewery Plant B. It was a rather significant organization. It had a combined capacity of 575,000 barrels a day.
As the brewery grew, so did the movement of prohibition across the country. Producing alcohol became illegal in 1919.
It was, of course, a death blow to the brewing industry. The buildings were designed for a specific purpose. A lot of them were sold for cold storage facilities.
In 1919, the Seaboard Milling Company purchased the Imperial Brewery building and turned it into a flour mill, which operated until 1985. The building was then owned by the railroad until Dean Realty took it over in 2007. While the building is mostly empty now, there is a little evidence of what used to be there.
We've covered up openings that may have held a machine and some pulleys, and belts would have either gone up or down through the building.
The building entered the historical registry in 2011. Dave sees a lot of opportunity in it.
Be it residential or maybe like an engineering or architectural studio type atmosphere.
As we continued on the tour, up a new spiral staircase, Sherry told us to go on without her. The heights were getting to her. Soon after, I asked Dave if he wanted to continue to the top.
I'm going to set the next one out, but Jack's going to, he's up for it. And you tell me about the view you see. You'll love the view up there.
From the window on the sixth floor, I could see Southwest Boulevard and I-35 just beginning to fill up with rush hour traffic, and downtown Kansas City was visible to the north. I could see Boulevard Brewery down the road. There was construction going on as the brewery expands into international markets. Today, nearly 20 breweries call Kansas City home. In James's book, Hometown Beer, there's an Imperial Brewery advertisement from 1906 that could be an ad for any Kansas City microbrewery today. It reads, "Patronize and encourage home industry. There is no better beer brewed anywhere. Don't contribute to the $2 million annually sent out of Kansas City for bottled beer." Over the years, Imperial Brewery has been an inspiration for local beer makers. Another Imperial Brewery popped up on Southwest Boulevard in 1933. It was gone by 1938. And there's a new brewery in the crossroads called Brewery Imperial, spelled with an E instead of an I. Owner Keith Thompson used to work at McCoy's, another brewery in town, and says he was inspired by the pre-Prohibition Imperial.
Kansas City is known as a good beer town, so it's a great time to open more breweries and represent Kansas City as a brewing community.
And who knows, maybe someday the Imperial Brewery building will be home to yet another brewery.
Our intern, Kyle J. Smith, brought us that installment of What Is That? Let us know if there's something you've always wondered about in the Kansas City landscape. You can email that tip to centralstandard@kcur.org. That's all the time we have for today's show covering the world of drink right here in Kansas City. To get that list of the best drinks in town, go to kcur.org later today. There will even be some recommendations from our critics that you didn't hear during this show. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, with Fridays by Jen Chen. We get lots of help from intern Kyle Smith and too many contributors to name. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend.